The Diner is brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio information and entertainment. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Go to audiblepodcast.com/thediner and get a free audiobook and a 30-day trial.
Listen, America, come closer. You in your home, and you speeding along the highways or riding the trains and skyways. Listen wherever you are. We bring you good news.
Just the coffee, thanks. Right, black. Hi, folks. James Lilacs here at the diner, sitting at my accustomed place at the long boomerang pattern formica counter at the old diner on an old Highway 23, about 18 and a half minutes from wherever you happen to be right now. You might want to stop in after you're done with your shopping, because I'm looking at the menu here, and it has a shopper special. Can you guess what that is? It's a hamburger patty, no bun, cottage cheese, and a side of peaches. What is this, 1956? This was like the staple for the dieting housewife going downtown to shop and taking her lunch at the Woolworths counter, or perhaps the place in the basement of the drugstore. But there aren't any stores around here on Highway 23, and they haven't been for an awful long time. Still, I suppose some people are shopping.
10 more shopping days till Christmas!
Yes, breathy white people's chorus. I know, but nobody's really worried about shopping now, are they? Nobody's panicked yet. This is the great week, I think. Next week, of course, everybody goes crazy, but this week, everybody is easing into the season nicely. The signs of Christmas are everywhere. The manifestations of the season are everywhere you look. The halls are decked with boughs of holly, whatever that actually means. The bedeckment here at the diner is not great. I mean, there's the hall, a very brief hall in the entryway before you come in, and then there's the hall back to the bathroom. It's about 3 feet long, but there is a sprig of holly in both positions. So deckment has been... It's an odd word. It's deck, isn't it? Well, we went out on the deck to talk, and on the way we stopped to deck the halls, and when we got out there, I found out he'd been dealing from the bottom of the deck. So I decked him. Maybe that's the original term, you know, for decking the halls, is to wrap your hands with holly and then punch the walls repeatedly, but I don't think so. I'm not even sure how you deck the walls exactly. Got to be some standard to it. I mean, just a nail and a sprig isn't enough, I've got to be thinking. And it's halls, plural. So every corridor in your house must be festooned properly. I'm guessing they're probably a line of holly that goes probably at handrail height, wouldn't you say? Or perhaps up in the wainscoting? Or is the wainscoting in the bottom? Wainscoting. Is that up or down? Stalagmite, stalactite? I don't know. Whatever. Nobody does it. That's the point. But still, we like to think of all these career knives, Victorian images of the holly being decked and fa-la-laing and the people out caroling. Although if you notice, when you think about the pictures of people caroling, and it's always a group of three guys and three women, and the men are wearing tall hats and the women have collars that go up to their ears, and everybody's holding up a song book and singing lustily. Well, no, London wouldn't, lustily wouldn't be the word, merrily, gaily, to use an old term. It's winter. There's snow, but nobody seems particularly cold. There's none of the steam coming out of their mouths. There's no tear forming at the corner of their eyes to quickly crystallize. There's no shivering. There's no blue tint to the tips of their fingers and noses. It's winter, but it's that magical Christmas winter when it's about 42 degrees or so, and yet there's snow and no slush. Well, Christmas is all about that ideal, isn't it? The one that you had when you were a child, the one that you had when you were growing up and went home and felt guilty for a variety of reasons, and the one that you give to your children later and hope that they understand and remember and take with them always, and they'd better, the ungrateful little gets... Well, no, but I did feel guilty when I went home for Christmas. Really. I'd had the audacity to leave home for college. I said, come on, I'm 36. You got to cut the cord sometime. Well, no, I was younger than that. But I didn't come often enough. I didn't stay long enough. And so I would sit there on Christmas and listen to these old songs from childhood and feel this horrible, unbridgeable gulf between now, the raw years of early adulthood when I didn't know what I wanted to be exactly, and then the comforting, easy, warm by the fire, footy jammy period of life where you're unwrapping a box of Legos. It's all gone. It's all gone. But eventually, of course, you take these songs and you incorporate them into domestic routines of your own devising, and then you're playing them, and as you play them at Christmas time, you remember happily what went before, and you realize that your daughter is hearing them and that she will incorporate them some days, that these sounds will mean Christmas to her, too. And someday, she'll come home and feel guilty that she hasn't stayed long enough. And thus are the scars of one generation polished and the resentments banked until they can be transferred to the next. It's the circle of life. It's what the holidays are all about. I'm kidding. But songs matter. Songs define what Christmas is. Particular songs, the way they're sung, the orchestration. These are the things that really strike you, your unformed ears, young enough, and say Christmas like no other musical genre can. Not any Thanksgiving songs out there that make people feel nostalgic. Nobody in the 4th of July gets a little spring in their step when they hear a Sousa march 2 weeks before the fireworks goes off. But Christmas sets the stage for the whole month. Unfortunately, I have no idea if any of the songs that the guy who comes in the middle of the night is to restock the jukebox. I got no idea what he has on here, and I can only fear the worst. I don't know what dark vault these things come from, but let's plunge into it, shall we? Let's start at the top. Here's A1.
Bang, bang, bang! Stick 'em up, Santa! Stick 'em up, Santa! Reach for the sky! Don't make a move, or the lead's gonna fly! Stick 'em up, Santa! Stick 'em up, Santa! Walk out the door! Now you bamboozle your varmint and come back with more! I'm gonna stay in bed with my two guns in, with one eye open just like Billy the Kid. My two
Did that kid actually shoot his father in those lyrics of that bouncy holiday classic? I think he did, yeah, I think he did. You could get suspended from school nowadays just for whistling Stick 'em Up Santa, let alone singing the lyrics. Just merely implying the existence of a weapon that would be used to threaten Santa in any way would get you kicked out of school for a month of December. Wow. Of course, those were the days when kids got guns for Christmas. I got one. I got Will's a Daisy BB gun. But still, if you have a father who can teach you how to respect and handle these things, it's an important lesson to a young boy. And my cousin got one, too, bigger than mine. And we were out in the woods one day, and he pumped that Daisy up beyond design specifications and shot me right in the buttocks. Yep. Hey, you learn a lot. Life on the farm. I never send him a card. Anyway, they also gave kids real guns. There's a Dragnet show, a classic of the genre, called A 22 for Christmas. Oh, it's just a merry little holiday tale where a couple of kids go off, go missing, nobody can find them, and parents find out that the kid had gone into the closet where the gifts were kept, and he found that 22 he wanted. He did. He took the bullets, and he, his friends went out and played around, and he shot his friend, put some leaves over the body, and ran home crying. Just a real cheerful, get-in-the-mood kind of show from Jack Webb. But there was a lesson, which is don't give a 22 rifle to a 7-year-old. Okay? We're clear. And let's hope the next one isn't as violent. Let's go to B2. It's a Foster Brooks Christmas.
Alvin, put that harmonica down.
Why?
Oh, no.
Because we're going to sing, that's why.
Not again.
Never mind. Now look, fellas, this is a pretty song, so let's try not to goof it up. Are you ready, Simon?
Sure, let's go.
All set, Theodore?
Hot dog, you bet.
Are you ready, Alvin? Ready, Alvin? Alvin!
Oh, nuts. We sure like girls, all kinds of girls. From Annie to Veronica. We like them small or fat or tall. I wanna play my harmonica.
Cut that out.
And if we want to get a kiss, we take them through our...
Yeah, that's probably going to be enough of that. An attempt to follow up on the success of the Hula Hoop song, but the Chipmunks had the basic same thing. Yeah, they had the father, who wasn't really a father, of course, because he was a human being, and they were chipmunks, but had him screaming at Alvin, which scarred Alvin deeply for life, I believe, and got back at his father later by marrying a Turkish girl. So I have no particular love for these guys, so let's see what else we have. I mean, as a kid, you loved it, and you used to sing along. And those, everybody joined in on that old hula hoop line there. But let's see, what else we got? How's about S2? Wait a minute. Wait a minute. This is an instrumental version of the Chipmunk song. What's the point? Everybody. Without the Chipmunks, there's absolutely no reason for this song to be, let alone be a Christmas standard, for heaven's sakes. Whoa. Yeah, all right. Finally, something good. Everybody, light up those cigarettes. Put on your hats. I give up. Oh. I'm not trusting this song anymore. I've just lost all faith. And the winner is the electric guitar over the xylophone. It was a close decision, but the judges scored it 4-3, 3-4, 5-2, 6-1. That was not a song. It was a fist fight. Well, at least the guitars won. All right, let's see what we have here next. You know what I probably won't find in the jukebox here is Roman Christmas music. I don't mean the stuff they play in St. Peter's Basilica today. I don't mean the stuff that they played in the Roman Empire after they'd nominally converted to Christianity. I mean the stuff from the pagan days when they had something called Saturnalia. Saturnalia! Happy Saturnalia. Madness. Fun for all. For a fortnight, society took it easy. The courts were suspended, minimal economic activity, lots of feasting. Presents were exchanged, for example. And I guarantee you the same dynamics that exist today existed back then. I'm not going to buy that for her. That's six sisters. She didn't spend one sisterzy on me last year. And I wonder what they wrapped them in. What did the Romans wrap their gifts in? Was it paper such as we have now? We have no idea. Because, you know, now if my mother had been a Roman, she would have saved the paper, she would have folded it neatly and put it away, and we'd have it today. But no. All we got from the Romans is stone. Stone and tile. But they had one other custom we do know about. On one day, the servants would swap places with the masters, which must have really brought the whole slavery thing into stark relief, because here you are essentially admitting the humanity of the very person that you have as your property. Which, you know, to the Romans, it's like, yeah, so? What's your point? But the slaves would loll about on the sofas, and the masters would serve them, you know, lark's eyeballs and frog's brains and, you know, the rest of the horrible things that they have to eat. Why didn't they eat more steak? They had cows. They had to figure out that when you cook these things, they were pretty good. They had a lot of money. Why didn't they have a lot of steak? Never been able to figure that out about the Romans. But it was a fascinating time. We like to see the Romans as distant and imperfect reflections of our own society, as most Western cultures in the last couple hundred years have been wont to do. If you'd like to learn a little bit more about this, though, you can read a dry scholarly text if you wish. Or you can read a book about it. Or you can have the book read to you. There's a series of novels, detective novels, that take place in ancient Rome. It's a small genre with two or three authors working in it, and one of my favorites is John Maddox Roberts, who writes the SPQR series. SPQR, of course, standing for Senatus Populus Qui Romanus, which was the slogan, the Senate and the people of Rome, which meant something for a while and then didn't for 1,600 years. His character is an aristocrat who finds his way into various scrapes, and you get a wonderful blend of Roman detail and a good, fast-moving murder story. They're not grim, they're not light, they're just good novels. Now, who has time to read at this time of the year? Have it read to you. Audible.com is the place to go. Audible, of course, an Amazon company, will be happy to give you a free 30-day trial with a free book to listen to. And what better way to start than in the middle of the series, SBQR 5 Saturnalia by John Maddox Roberts. You can get it free by going to audiblepodcast.com/thediner. That's audiblepodcast.com/thediner. And once you're there, select that or any other book. Start at the beginning of the SBQR series and you can work your way all through them. Once you hear one, you'll be hooked and you'll realize that the WhisperSync technology will enable you to drop it on one device and pick it up on another. It's really quite remarkable. audiblepodcast.com/thediner. Go there and demonstrate your appreciation for them sponsoring our little chance here at this restaurant on Old Highway 23. Now, before I go on to the next tune, perhaps I'd best betake myself to the facilities, wash my hands, splash some cold water on my face, and here are some messages from some of our other imaginary, but no less valuable, sponsors.
Try to remember these dates in December, the 10th, 11th, and 15th. Try to remember these dates in December, and friends will all know you're a mellow fellow.
This is Jack Webb. When you mail on schedule during this holiday season, the post office is ready to deliver on schedule. Automated machinery from coast to coast will speed your zip-coded letters and parcels to arrive in time for a Merry Christmas. But remember, mail cards out of state by December 10th, mail parcels to local and nearby areas by December 11th, and local cards by the 15th. Remember, December 10th, 11th, and 15th.
Try to remember these dates in December and follow.
Make it a white Christmas. Give her a major appliance. Make it a white Christmas. Give her a major appliance.
That idea comes your way from U.S. Steel.
And a wonderful idea it is. A major appliance is a gift that means so much to a wife. A gift that lightens her work all year long and gives her more time to spend with the rest of the family.
Appliance and department stores all over the country are featuring white Christmas displays.
With fabulous selections of work-saving major appliances. Modern home freezers, clothes washers and dryers.
Big new refrigerators, up-to-date ranges, automatic water heaters.
Smart steel cabinet sinks and those wonderful new dishwashers.
You know, ladies, a husband can take a hint. Tell him how he can make it a white and wonderful Christmas.
By giving you a modern major appliance.
Absolutely. Thank you there, Brian Setzer, Minneapolis native. And thanks also to Alan Bunce and Peg Lynch there for reminding you to make it a white Christmas and buy her a major appliance. Not a minor appliance, a big, honking, major appliance. That was brought to you, of course, also by U.S. Steel, reminding you, America, to buy steel in whatever form you can. Just buy it. And since most people aren't in the market for, like, enormous construction, you know, style steel I-beams and the rest, buy it in the form of an appliance which will guarantee a white Christmas. Now, not many people believe that the installation of a Kelvinator means that the skies will open and snow will fall. Perhaps they meant that since most major appliances of the day were white, that that was the white Christmas that they were talking about. Well, in any case, it's a hard thing to wrap, even harder thing to put under the tree. Buy it. Anyway, okay? Fine. Thanks. Well, let us continue with our traditional survey of non-traditional Christmas music. I'm expecting to get at any moment a telegram announcing that Christmas has been canceled this year. That always happens in the children's stories, doesn't it? At some point, Santa says, oh, looks like Christmas won't happen this year. Santa seemed to jump to that conclusion fairly quickly. Oh, the weather's bad. Looks like there won't. I hate to disappoint the kids, but there won't be Christmas this year. Oh, there's a solar flare, they're saying, to disrupt navigation. Guess Christmas is going to be canceled. Oh, my hemorrhoids are acting up. There's no way I can... I mean, like he was always looking for an excuse to cancel Christmas and just had to fake the enthusiasm when the elves or somebody else pulled it together. Anyway, so that'll happen soon. Christmas will be canceled. But don't worry. Don't worry. It always happens. It's always part of the shtick. Although maybe this year they're going to cancel... the cancellation of Christmas. That would be novel. Well, let us continue here. Let's go to N1. But of course.
Santa Claus was taking a ride, driving his reindeer through the sky. The sleigh trail winds along the Milky Way. When all at once across the night came a burning streak of light, Sputnik heading straight his way. All of the reindeer shook with fear. What'll we do, oh Santa dear? That Sputnik is bound to hit the sleigh. Then they heard a little voice so clear, coming through the stratosphere.
Santa, I will save your sleigh.
Then they saw this little purple guy. He had one long horn and one big eye, and he was rocking down that Milky Way. And then he grabbed that Sputnik by the tail, swung it around and let it sail. He said,
you stay away from Santa's sleigh.
Then the reindeer took him by the hand, shouted,
Super Superman,
won't you come and ride on Santa's sleigh?
Yeah.
There he sat by Santa's side, his little heart was full of pride, said,
I'll be Santa's helper Christmas Day.
As the sleigh goes through the night, voice so bright.
This will be a happy Christmas day.
Yes, this will be.
I know this will be.
This will be a happy Christmas day.
Okay, so that's the one-eyed purple people eater. Emphasis on people eater there. An alien species who apparently thrives in the consumption of human flesh, who's now a good guy because it's Christmas, and naturally, being from another civilization far away, who ate human beings, would exult in their particular religious observations. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It does. I'm more inclined to believe that the one-eyed, one-armed, one-horned, whatever, purple people eater grabbing Sputnik and throwing it out of the way, first of all, indicates that Santa really is high up in orbit, and there's not a lot of air up there, but if that's the case, that what actually he was trying to do was to provoke an exchange of nuclear weapons between the United States and the Soviet republics by damaging the pride of the Soviet space and science program there. So I also would like to know why it is that we accept the fact that that's the purple people eater in that context, but it's not Alvin. I'm just saying that if the purple people eater ever requested a hula hoop, there'd be confusion, right? But it probably wasn't confusing that the purple people eater set aside his animus toward humanity and helped Santa complete his rounds by getting Sputnik out of his flight path. There's a long tradition in these songs of the enemies setting aside their differences for Christmas because of Christmas. Snoopy versus the Red Baron is the finest one, where they salute each other, "Merry Christmas, my friend. We will return to attempting to kill each other in the most horrible fashion possible, wounding you while you are in the sky in a vehicle which we will then cripple, causing you to spiral down every last moment of your life filled with absolute dread and terror." We'll get back to that tomorrow, but for now, peace of Christ. Well, anyway, whether or not this tradition was carried on in other songs, I have no idea. I almost hesitate to look at the jukebox to see what's next. There's no names on any of these things, just red and green labels. All right, let's try F1.
Merry Christmas, Miss Pac-Man.
What?
Merry Christmas, Pac-Man.
Merry Christmas. What?
Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas, everybody. Merry Christmas.
You know, Miss Pac-Man, I just love this time of the year.
So, the Pac-Man men celebrate Christmas, I'm sure, in their own special way.
Snowflakes and frozen lakes.
Hear the wind.
Light a fire.
Hot cider and ginger cakes.
You.
In the night fall.
You're electronic creatures.
I wish from you. And the dream comes true.
Was this Super Tramp all of a sudden?
As you're gazing out the frosted window pane.
No. Well, that's a mortifying cultural product. A Pac-Man Christmas. I wasn't aware they had sufficient backstory to warrant such a thing. Although, when you think about it, maybe a Pac-Man Easter would be better, because if there's anybody who understands resurrection, it would, of course, be Pac-Man. Well, let's,
As you know, what? Pac-Man and his family have decided to invite the gang of ghosts, Speedy, Bashful, Shadow, and Pokey, to their Christmas dinner.
I can't turn it off.
But from the sounds of the ghosts huddled in their horrible hideout, it doesn't seem as if they care for Christmas one little bit.
There, I got it paused. Hold on a second here, though. This would seem to be the classic narrative, right? If Pac-Man is inviting his enemies, the ghosts, who win in the end, every time. Really? Don't they? I mean, if I remember playing that game, there's no way to end it without Pac-Man being consumed by the creatures. So it's possible that this thing we're hearing now, this little Christmas interlude, takes place before the eventual death of Pac-Man, before he was inserted into the machine into an endless loop of damnation and consumption. Interesting. But if this is that classic narrative, then, though, that means that there's going to be a rapprochement, a sort of a Christmas Eve, World War I style, where Pac-Man and the ghosts set aside their differences, which really escaped me. I'm not sure what they are. It's entirely possible that Pac-Man himself did not own any of the fruit that he consumed, and that they were put in the maze as a means of keeping them from creatures like Pac-Man, and that he was an interloper, an intruder, a thief, who came and stole the things that they needed to live. In which case, you know, really, when you play the game, you're cheering on a burglar. But they put everything aside here because it's Christmas, and Christmas is the season of not killing each other, both for the Red Baron, for the Purple People Eater, and for Pac-Man. I really don't want to unpause this, but I think I must.
I hate Christmas too, Bashful! Who is it? What do you want, and go away?
A singing telegram for the ghost. Christmas Day is tomorrow. No need to spend it alone. Use four ghosts are invited to spend Christmas at our home. Signed, the Pac-Man.
Hey, what a break. Once we get into Pac-Man's house, pow, the chase is on. Guys, for once we might have an interesting Christmas. You know, I never could figure out the big deal about Christmas Day. Mondays, Tuesdays, Christmas Day, all days are the same.
Yeah, I suppose when you're trapped in a virtual world with nothing but pimply faces leaning over the glass, they'd seem that way, but the...
There is the hunt at Easter for the eggs. There is the turkey at Thanksgiving. But there is nothing like that December day that shines because of giving.
Some days like Christmas with all of its adornment.
What are you going to rhyme with adornment?
For little boys and little girls, some days are more important.
I was hoping for forlornment. Okay, no more of that. I can only assume that in the true spirit of Christmas, the ghosts went over to Pac-Man's house. And what are they ghosts of? Were they, what creatures? Maybe they're spirits. That could be three spirits. They could be the spirits from A Christmas Carol, where they go and show Pac-Man what it was like when he was in years ago, when actually he was just two lines of code, and then the current Christmas, which consists of some people who are stuck in an airport lounge because their plane was canceled, joylessly jamming the joystick around in a bar, playing Pac-Man. And then the Ghost of the Future, where he's on a handheld device. Interesting. Not really. No. But anyway, I assume in the time-honored genre here that there's some rapprochement is struck again, and that they're all friends for the day because it's Christmas. And then the next day, they go back to the same endless, eternal ritual of consumption and murder. There's got to be something here that's just not as juvenile as the rest of this stuff.
Season's greetings from the bat, from the vampires and black cats.
No, no.
Every werewolf that I know sends his warmest Christmas.
No, he doesn't.
Christmas is the time of year that fills all creatures full of joy. All of the things we hold so dear come to all Christmas night, be he monster, girl, or boy.
Okay, no, this is defining monsterism downward. Monsters do not get to celebrate Christmas. It's not for them. All right, Frankenstein, maybe. But, you know, okay, Wolfman maybe, because he didn't ask for that. But the mummy? No, the mummy worships dark, mysterious, awful Egyptian gods. And Dracula. Dracula and Christmas aren't really on the same page. You can't say this is the best time of the year when everywhere around you are displayed the items that make you rear back and hiss and bare your hellish, godless fangs. Dracula doesn't get to do Christmas. Dracula doesn't want to do Christmas. I tell you, I'm sorry. I was expecting better today. I really, really was. And I'm in one of those moods. I remember how he used to be when I'd be sitting around the Valley restaurant, you know, before I discovered the diner. And you'd get into a conversation and an argument with somebody, and you'd get a little spun up, and what you really wanted to do was you'd reach over and shake a cigarette out of your pack and light up, and that would calm your nerves. But I don't smoke cigarettes anymore. So what am I? I'm gonna. What's that? No, I don't smoke cigarettes. Oh. He's offering me an e-cigarette. And this is going to help. This is going to calm me down. All right. here it is. Oh, all right. Let's give it a puff here.
Wow, that's weird. Hey, what? What's in this thing? What do you mean it's a helium e-cigarette? Why would you put helium in an e-cigarette? You got a pack with noble gases in there, too? For heaven's sakes, how long am I going to sound like this? I'll have to do something to get my blood chemistry back to normal. I'll have to do some vigorous exercise. I'm not going to do jumping jacks. I'd look like an idiot if I sat here and did jumping jacks. Something else, something that would just make me move my body completely and totally. If only there was something around here that I could use to exercise vigorously to get my blood chemistry straight. Oh, me, I want a hula hoop. Oh, I said it. Oh. Well, folks, this should pass, but so will I now and next week, and there will be next week. I promise we'll have better Christmas music than this. It can't possibly get any worse. Anyway, thank you for joining me here at the diner. I'm James Lilacs, and I'll see you down the road.
The Diner is brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio information and entertainment. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Go to audiblepodcast.com/thediner and get a free audiobook and a 30-day trial.